Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Always nice to be able to share this hour with you. This will be an empowering hour. First, we're going to do our classroom on the air once a week. I do an in-depth discussion on a topic that I hope affects most people. If it doesn't affect you directly, I'm sure that you'll be able to share this information if you choose with someone that would benefit from it. Today is going to be about chronic pain. Over half of all Americans suffer from either fatigue or pain. Both, in many cases, are under our control, and therefore, what would be the best ways of approaching it? So that's what our opening will be. Following that, I'm going to share some words of wisdom from a university of ideas. And in this case, we're going to hear about how the greater good that we hear about all the time, well, get your vaccine for the greater good. Take this pill for the greater good. Vote for this person for the greater good is actually used as a tool of social control. I will then leave time open for you to discuss this issue, only that issue. And our talkback number is 888-874-4888. I've been looking at the statistics. And for whatever reason, our numbers are through the roof. We're not talking about a few new listeners or people downloading. We're talking about tens of thousands, also hundreds of thousands downloading, actually millions, many millions downloading documentaries and self-empowerment videos. They're free, by the way, on prn.fn and garynall.com. And part of the feedback we get is, they trust the information. Here's what I can tell you. This is non-political. I don't subscribe to any political ideology. I do support third party, fourth party, fifth party, multiple parties that are not affiliated with the corporatization of our body politic. So I never, and I mean never in my life, have I supported either Democrats or Republicans, because I see the malfeasance of the political system and how lobbyists capture special interest groups, politicians individually, and then collectively. I'll give you one example. We reported this week and shared verbatim information from Freedom Information Act documents of a Dr. William Thompson. Those documents show that William Thompson was telling the truth when he said that he and all the people in his division conspired to cover up information on the adverse effects of the MMR vaccine, and it had a 324% increase in young African-American children, 36 months and younger. You're talking about three-year-olds. Now, Dr. Brian Hooker, whose son suffered from vaccine-related injury, a professor in sciences at the University in California, had communicated with the CDC, and normally everything is done without any personal contact. You send an application, they send you back something, you may get something, and a lot of it's redacted, so you really don't have the truth you need. But in this case, something unusual happened. Dr. Thompson actually phoned him. In a series of discussions they had, it finally came out from Dr. Thompson that the truth was that the MMR vaccine indeed did cause autism spectrum disorder in young children, mainly African-American young children, 36 months and younger, and that this was, in effect, a crime against humanity, and indeed it is. Dr. Thompson's analysis showed that 200,000, almost a quarter million young children, African-American males, could have prevented this. If the CDC was simply honest and said, hey, this vaccine shouldn't be used, but that's not how it works. Not if the CDC, where the majority of its money comes from vaccine makers. It owns or co-owns patents. Therefore, it's in the business of funding vaccine research. Then when the vaccine is perfected, then it owns the right, and it gives it to different manufacturers who in turn give it a royalty. So how in the world can you expect an agency that is that complicit in profiteering off a vaccine to say we should withdraw it? And so the word was, no vaccine is bad. All vaccines are good. And if you should happen to have that rare, very unusual circumstance where there's an adverse effect, it's not really the vaccine. It may be a bad batch. We've done the numbers. We've done the actual scholarship that no one else at my knowledge have done, Richard Gale and myself. And we have spent thousands and thousands of hours doing our homework. And I'll stand up with this homework and our studies against any scientist on the planet. And we have, right now, approximately 10 million children who've been injured, either with autism, about 5 million, 4 to 5 million, or other conditions due to the adverse effects of vaccines, like autoimmune conditions. And then when you add in the parents, you're up to somewhere in the neighborhood of around 20 million people who have actually been affected. That's no small number of people, and yet you will never hear any of the official organizations, the American Academy of Pediatrics, which gets a lot of its funding from vaccine makers or pharmaceutical companies, you won't hear anyone in Washington, anyone in the media, ever suggest that maybe there should be an impartial, independent, unbiased group of scientists who review the literature to see what is the connection. Instead, you see the parents vilified. You see them called conspiracy theorists, anti-vaxxers, yet every single one was pro-vaccine. Every single one. Even after some injuries, they still maintain pro-vaccine. Well, we've had medical doctors on this program who are pediatricians whose own children ended up with autism, and they personally vaccinated their own children. And it took them a long time to realize they were responsible along with the vaccine. And then they had to go through that whole self-guilt. And then they ask a question, how in the world, if I'm a board-certified pediatrician or a professor of pediatrics, as one was, how could I have been that stupid? And I wouldn't say they're stupid at all. To the contrary, they're highly educated, very disciplined, very dedicated, and I'm sure the vast majority of physicians want to do well by their patients. I'm not cynical about that, but it's all based upon the protocol you're using. So if you're using the wrong protocol, even with the best of intention, you're going to end up like an oncologist. 600,000 more or less cancer patients are going to die using your therapies. Now here's the question. At what point are there enough dead bodies using your therapies, your protocols, religiously, without ever questioning you, to you say, maybe we are using the wrong protocols? And the trouble is, that never happens. I mean, never happens in oncology or the rest of medicine. So then we, the public, have to realize we're dealing with something bordering on a cult-like religion. They are the high priests. They believe what they're told, they're invested in the outcome, and they don't ever take that moment and say, maybe we're wrong in how we're approaching this. As a result, any doctor who was once their colleagues, who decided, I am going to take a look, found out what they were doing was not right, and then changes to a more natural and holistic perspective, they're considered the crackpots, the quacks, the charlatans. And then there's a whole industry to attack them, led by their official publication, Wikipedia. It is the publication, in my opinion, of tyrants. And we're about to prove that in a court of law. I will be announcing in the next, hopefully the next 5 days, that process service has completed. And then I'll explain all the people that I'm currently suing, with a whole group of doctors waiting, because we're going to be engaged in class action suits. But we will lay out our case. By the way, I have over 1,100 exhibits that are entered into my court case. We took time, took about 10,000 hours of research, a lot of effort, but it's now in process, no longer being planned. Everything has been served. But then ask yourself, how could a whole encyclopedia pretending to be an encyclopedia, how could they get it wrong, universally wrong, 100% wrong, and no one in the media challenges them? No one in the body politic challenges them, unless they themselves are a victim. So that's a question that has not been answered yet. And your answer could be as valid as anyone else's. How is it that we can have so much misinformation coming from official sources, publications of record like the New York Times, and they're wrong on all these important issues? and nothing ever changes. Did you see anyone held accountable for the New York Times getting us into the war in Iraq? And do you think we would have gone into the Iraq war without the support of Judith Miller and her false stories? I do not believe so. And how do you think Colin Powell feels today after knowing he was lied to? And Colonel Wilkerson, who was his chief of staff, was on the show multiple times talking about how that fiasco unraveled. So you have power bases in the United States that all have political affiliations, that all have deep state affiliations, and yet we are listening to them instead of looking for the truth. What does that mean? Why can't we seek the truth where it's at? This program is non-political. This program is non-ideological. We simply look for the truth, and wherever I can find the truth and verify that it's the truth, I'm going to share it. And that makes us a threat to the establishment or ideologues. So we're going to continue doing what we do, as you will hear in my next commentary, which will be on our Monday program. I'm going to take on the entire vaccine establishment using its own science and its own statistics to show you them when they promise that it's safe and effective. They do not have any quality science backing it up. But still, that will not deter people from getting vaccinated, because we'd rather be a good citizen, think in the collective, and that's why we're playing this, the greater good is used as a tool for social control. And then after the adverse effects, then people feel, why didn't I do my homework? Because you relied upon people you shouldn't have trusted, who've never shown that they could be trusted. More on that. Anyhow, that's our program today, and we begin with our classroom on the air. I'm sharing with you the best that I know at this moment about dealing with chronic pain. It's constant, it's long-term pain, and it's a big problem in the United States. If we listen to the mass media, the painkillers manufactured by large pharmaceutical companies are the way we should seek relief. But there are alternatives to those products, and Americans who suffer from chronic pain would do well to stop obeying the commands of their television sets. Although running to the medicine chest and swallowing a few over-the-counter or prescription pills may provide immediate comfort by eliminating the perception of pain by your brain, underlying causes are not addressed at all, and overall health has not been improved in any way. By contrast, a wide variety of natural treatment modalities exist that can aid the body in coping with chronic pain at a more fundamental level. Pain is a signal. It's telling us something is wrong with the body. It may be triggered by a myriad of factors ranging from diseases such as rheumatoid arthritis and cancer to injuries from exercise or accidents to food allergies, which can, for example, provoke migraines. It can also, in athletes, especially bikers and runners, it can produce pain in the knees, the hips, your joints, toes, and ankles. And I know people who've given up athleticism because they said they couldn't handle the pain. And frequently, they were told by a rheumatologist or pain expert, you got to lay off that. Why? Well, because there's all kinds of structural problems there, and we're looking at this MRI, and what if I changed my diet? What if I went to a healthy diet? What if I pulled back to rest my body, but also stopped anything that could be producing allergic responses or inflammation? Well, they don't know about that. And while the causes of pain are many, the mechanisms used by the body to produce pain are similar. When your body experiences pain, a nerve impulse travels from the injured site up through the spinal cord to your brain. At this point, the brain reacts by registering the pain in our consciousness. When the body experiences pain, inflammation usually results. Inflammation is characterized by swelling and redness and heat and pain, and if left untreated, partial or complete loss of function of the affected area can occur. And during inflammation, protease, an enzyme that aids in the assimilation of protein is liberated in the injured region, initiating a chain reaction that compounds the problem. Small particles of protein, known as bradykinins, are also released and interact with the nerve receptors, resulting in the perception of pain. In addition, the bradykinins summon the immune cells to the region and widen the blood vessels. That's necessary to try to get blood into the area. Now, over the course of time, if you do not deal with pain properly or the underlying causes, it gets a lot worse. And then we start increasing the amount of our aspirin or ibuprofen or painkillers to dull the sensation. Opiates are one of the worst that we can take. Oxycontin is at the top of that list of deadly opiates taken for pain, generally originally with cancer. So then you give so much of the opiate for cancer pain, the person begins to diminish conscious awareness. So you could go to see someone who's in hospice care and want to have those final conversations with them, and they can hear what you're saying, but they're in la-la land. The opiates are terrible. And by the way, opiates killed over 84,000 people either last year or the year before. So what do we do? What's the good news in this scenario? The good news is nutrition. One of the most effective methods of combating chronic pain is saturation. This can be effectively achieved by consuming 6 to 8 ounce glasses of water per day. Yeah, that's simple. Remember, what is the number one thing by weight in your body? Water. It could be upwards of 70%. For the elderly, this is especially important. A recent medical research reveals that dehydration can play a major role in the onset of chronic pain due to the spinal discs drying out. Note that when the body feels sensation of thirst, partial dehydration has already occurred. Therefore, we should try to quench the body's need for liquid prior to actually feeling it. In addition to water, organic fruits and vegetables and certain juices create an acid-base balance within the body, which is important for diminishing pain. Now, excess acidity encourages the stimulation of peripheral nerves and increases our perception of pain. By alkalizing the body, this type of stimulation can be prevented. So what don't you want to drink if you're in pain? Coffee. Coffee is highly anabolic and creates an acidic reaction, which actually exacerbates it. By alkalizing the body, you can prevent this. And furthermore, juices derived from plant sources provide abundant sources of phytochemicals and antioxidants, vitamins, minerals, and enzymes. The acidity of the body can have a profound effect upon health. I work for 33 years as a senior research fellow at the Institute of Biology and Anti-Aging Medicine. But I also, every single day, I also met with the director of the center. And he was a renowned, he came from the Pasteur Institute and fled Nazi Germany. And he was a health educator. He was a top-flight researcher. He dedicated the greatest portion of his life to devising treatments for pain. That was his specialty, and cancer. Now, pain sensations can be substantially alleviated by altering our dietary habits. In this research, we have seen that eliminating severe pancreatitis cancer pain by raising the pH level in his patients, he did this. I was there. I was at the hospital across the street from the center. I saw the effects. And while an excess of acidic foods can contribute to the accumulation of hazardous waste products within the system, recent studies of the average American diet have revealed that 80% of our dietary intake is acidic, while only 20% is alkaline. In a healthy diet, these figures should be reversed. Good examples of alkaline foods are soybeans, potatoes, melons, and lemons. These foods aid the body in eliminating harmful accumulations. It's important to note that beneficial forms of acid do exist and can be derived from coconuts, Brazil nuts, filberts, macadamias, pecans, and walnuts. And although a variety of beans, black beans, adzuki beans, chickpeas, kidney beans, lentils, mung beans, navy beans, red beans, white beans, and pintos register on the acidic, low acidic side of the pH scale. They too can be considered healthy snacks. The same principle applies to oats, rice, and whole wheat. Negative acids generally register extremely low on the pH scale, meaning that they are highly acidic. What's the worst food you could possibly take if you're in pain? Any form of red meat, all right, and also sugars and alcohol. Now, our body can block the sensation of pain with endorphins, which are natural proteins manufactured by the pituitary gland in the brain. Endorphins are an effective alternative to typical conventional treatments, and fortunately their production within the brain can be facilitated with a nutritional approach. What would be the best of the best? D-L-phenylalanine, or DLPH. This essential fatty acid is crucial in preventing the breakdown of endorphins by enzymes in the brain. These enzymes are secreted by the brain to prevent the body from becoming addicted to its own endorphins. By slowing down this process, the body will experience reduced amounts of pain. And studies indicate that 4 grams, that's 4,000 milligrams, of DL-phenylalanine administered a half hour before a tooth extraction can reduce pain by up to 50%. And DLPA has also been shown to be quite effective in alleviating chronic lower back pain. But it's important to remember that this product will not completely eliminate all pain. However, it can reduce the pain threshold significantly in most individuals and can serve as a safe, natural alternative to conventional painkillers. The general recommended dose is about 500 milligrams 3 times a day. Then we have the B vitamins. Clinical evidence indicates that injections of B vitamins, especially B1, which is thiamine, and B12, can ameliorate severe pain induced by headaches, arthritis, and dental surgery. And deficiencies of vitamin B12, which are often responsible for the onset of neuropathies, can be eliminated with intramuscular injections. And patients can receive injections of 1 milligram in their doctor's office, and symptoms of neuropathy frequently will disappear within several days. Now, many times blood tests do not provide adequate evidence that a vitamin B12 deficiency exists, and consequently the patient is told that intramuscular injections are not needed. However, it's important to realize there is not a direct correlation between the amount of vitamin B12 in the blood and that within the nerve cells. So an injection of B12 is completely safe and can produce some traumatic results. Then a superstar of pain relief is vitamin C. Vitamin C will alleviate the problem of sensitive gums. A recent clinical study revealed that most patients with this problem benefit from taking vitamin C supplements to bowel tolerance, the point just before experiencing diarrhea. But how do you know that you're at bowel tolerance versus hydrochloric acid tolerance? And I actually did this when I had a skeptic in the audience, obviously an agent provocateur. A man stood up in an audience, a large audience. It was at a high school auditorium that was packed over on the east side. About 700 people were there. And I was talking about alternative approaches to certain conditions. And he said, well, all this vitamin C, all it's going to do is give you diarrhea if you go above 1,000 or 2,000 milligrams. I said, well, that can be true. I said, however, there is a way of taking it in a buffered form so that your body better assimilates it. The best, of course, is intravenous, because then it bypasses the stomach completely. And he was arguing the issue. So I said, I'll tell you what. Does anyone in the audience have vitamin C? And someone, including, he was a physician, had vitamin C. And he said he keeps it on his desk because he takes it all day throughout the day, and it really helps him. So I said, could I borrow it? So we got a glass of water, and I said, let's just see how much of this vitamin C I can take. Yeah, I did this. And if you see me hurry off the stage, you know that I've reached my tolerance. So the doctor measured out the vitamin C into the glass, and then every half hour would give me another amount. And I was able to have no problem at all. And this other person, the doctor was calling out how much I was up to. And by the time my lecture finished, I was at 33,000 milligrams. And I said, so it depends upon your tolerance. It depends upon how you take it. And the best way of taking it is in a smoothie, especially a protein smoothie, because then the body's really buffering the vitamin C. And it's, remember, you're dealing with ascorbic acid hitting hydrochloric acid, and that's where you get that exchange that can cause diarrhea or bloating stomach. And I said, so take your vitamin C with a smoothie, and you can take a lot more. Anyhow, just realize a lot of people just take it all at once, and that's not how I recommend it. I recommend you take it throughout a day in divided doses and generally take it in a protein shake. So, but vitamin C is terrific. And while some people can only tolerate maybe 10 grams a day, I've seen other people take up to 50 grams a day. And the average probably, Linus Pauling took 18,000 to 20,000 milligrams a day. And that was when he was older. And he didn't take it in a buffered form. Now, another nutrient that can help you is called protease, P-R-O-T-E-A-S-E. And as I mentioned earlier, proteolytic enzymes cause inflammation after injury and thus pain. By holding the production of protease, the effects of inflammation can be reduced. But since the healing process and inflammation are linked, it's not advisable to eliminate inflammation altogether. Doing so may inhibit the body's ability to heal itself. So basically, the objective of protease supplements is to obtain a limited amount of inflammation that will not hinder the healing process. In the past, studies have correlated the injection of protease with allergic reactions, but oral supplements are now recommended and have the ability to promote healing and expedite the inflammation period. And the enzymes are eventually assimilated into the bloodstream, where they are transported to injured areas and aid the body's natural protease. And protease supplements have established their effectiveness in ameliorating sports-related injuries and bruises, episiotomies, tooth extractions, sunburn, sciatica, and a large number of clinical studies. And supplements of protease can accelerate the healing process and diminish the severity of pain by up to 50%. If you normally take a week to recuperate from an injury, your recovery time could be reduced by about 3 days. And unlike typical painkillers such as aspirin, proteolytic enzymes do not completely block out all pain. This is actually a positive effect because the inflammation that manages to develop stimulates the body's natural healing agents. And although a large body of peer-reviewed scientific literature off PubMed, and that's the only information I use, has substantiated the role of protease in the healing process. And the reason that the public is not always aware of this is because non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medications such as ibuprofen are what is promoted all the time, not supplements. Nobody makes money off the supplements. They make a lot of money off the pain-relieving drugs. But there are also a lot of pain remedies that are herbal in nature. For example, let's just say that I have a woman who's suffering from menstrual pain. The most common way of approaching that is with Dong Quai, D-O-N-G-Q-U-A-I. It's a mixture of other remedies, can also be used as well. And so I look at Angelica, I look at the cortidialysis, that's C-O-R-Y-D-A-L-I-S, the muscle relaxant wild yam, and also Dioscorea, D-I-O-S-C-O-R-E-A. And these are generally, along with Black Haw, H-A-W, used in tincture form. And it really is good for anti-cramps. And also cinnamon, wild ginger are also good for cramps. And PMS, lots of Dong Quai. I use that also, dandelion root, and Melia, M-E-L-I-A, that enhances energy flow to a particular area. And That helps as well. For headaches, valerian and skullcap are probably your best too. Again, these are in tincture form, and skullcap is relatively safer, can be successfully helping you eliminate some migraines. And B-complex too can also help with migraines, especially the non-flush vitamin B3 or niacinamide. So that can make a difference. Now, also want to go to another area here, and that is that the more you change your diet and lifestyle, the better it's going to be. For example, I have people who always have stomach pain, sometimes because of stress. They lock their energy into the stomach area. So mints, peppermint, spearmint, is used for stomach pain. And I'll compare that with slippery elm, and that works. Also, Chinese herb cordalis, C-O-R-Y-D-A-L-I-S, that can also help. For urinary tract infections, your urinary tract is very susceptible if you have sugar or candida to pain. And for that, Oregon grape root is used, and that works. Barberry, B-A-R-B-E-R-R-Y root, bark. And the Chinese herb, again, coptis, C-O-P-T-I-S, that's good. And also these have natural antibiotic and antiseptic qualities. And marshmallow, not marshmallow, M-A-R-S-H-M-A-L-L-O-W, can be used for that. But for general pain, kava, K-A-V-A, which can be found in the scientific literature, helping a lot of people from the South Pacific Islands. They use that. And also I would use wood betony, B-E-T-O-N-Y, and rosemary. They're very good. These have been used for centuries, by the way. They also help with diarrhea and severe gout. Rosemary, which many know as a culinary herb, remember your roasted potatoes with rosemary on them, has a strong analgesic quality and is particularly beneficial when used as a massage oil for muscle aches and headaches. And rosemary oil is commonly paired with a diffusing agent, usually almond or olive oil. And then the herb blue vervain, V-E-R-V-A-I-N, contains anti-inflammatory and analgesic properties. And finally, curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, which is a bright yellow compound derived from turmeric and curry. And exercise is also another way we end up with pain. And when a person engages in exercise, endorphins, which act as natural opiates, are released by the body. This is why professional athletes are often able to continue partaking in athletic events after they're injured. In these situations, sensations of pain are not experienced during the participating event because you're releasing so many endorphins, but you will feel the pain afterwards. And so in those cases, I always ask, rest the area and then give yourself some green juices. Chlorophyll is a very big way of helping that. And for sciatica, people suffering from acute sciatic pain, which is characterized by numbness or tingling in the thigh, the buttocks, the calf, the toe, and the groin, should lie on their back and carefully pull their knee towards their chest. This activity can alleviate symptoms of sciatic pain by opening the lumbar lower discs. In addition, sciatic pain can be, well, you can lay on your side and assume the fetal position. That also helps. These are simply stretches you do. And then, of course, for arthritis, you're looking at changing your diet because so often it's due to foods you're allergic to or beverages you're allergic to, in which case chondroitin sulfate, glucosamine sulfate, sea cucumber, all of these are good. And, of course, acupuncture does work. The Chinese concept of qi, they pronounce it Q-I, we call it qi, pertains to the flow of energy within our bodies and is responsible for life. In general, qi can be described as the sum of all physiological processes, metabolism, and consciousness. And according to the Chinese beliefs, clinical disorders can be explained by a deficiency of qi, while pain is commonly a product of blocked qi. Thus, chronic pain often necessitates eliminating blockage and strengthening the qi, and that can be done with acupuncture and tai chi and qigong and other energy rebalancing techniques. Therapeutic touch, magnet healing, that's big. That can really work as well. And so avoid the highly acidic foods, avoid sugar, alcohol, coffee, carbonated beverages, excess salt. Avoid these things. Gelatin, all right? And get your endorphins moving by doing some good exercising as well. That's our classroom on the air. We are 36 minutes into our program. And again, my hope is each week to take on a topic that benefits as many people as possible in the audience. On upcoming programs, I'll be dealing with fatigue. I'll be dealing with getting back your muscle and nice ripped muscles when you're over the age of 50, clear up to 100. I'll show you how that's done. So we'll be taking this journey one day each week. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going directly into how the greater good is used as a tool of social control. And then ask yourself, how many times have you heard that for the greater good, but it wasn't? It was for corporate good, ideological good, political good. And then one day you realize, wow, that didn't work out. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
We are not those who bend the knee before authority, but rather those who, against authority if need be, are adamant as to the honor and freedom of that country. Instead of respect for reason, open dialogue, freedom of speech, and individual and property rights, political systems across the world are becoming increasingly authoritarian. Deceptions and lies, manipulation and propaganda, fear-mongering and psychological operations are all being used to justify political actions and policies that destroy life. How do politicians continue to convince the public to do away with their freedoms in favor of heavy-handed government control? Why are so few people defending liberty when a world absent of it is a world of mass suffering? In this video, we are going to examine these questions. If freedom is regressing today throughout such a large part of the world, wrote Albert Camus, this is probably because the devices for enslavement have never been so cynically chosen or so effective, but also because her real defenders, through fatigue, through despair, or through a false idea of strategy and efficiency, have turned away from her. It is often said that one cannot solve a problem if one is not even cognizant of it. And herein lies one of the reasons freedom is retreating so rapidly from our world. Many people still believe themselves to be free, and as Goethe wrote, none are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe they are free. Those who believe themselves to be free disregard the fact that to be governed in the modern world is to be watched, inspected, spied upon, directed, law-driven, numbered, regulated, enrolled, indoctrinated, preached at, controlled, checked, estimated, valued, censored, and commanded by beings who have neither the right, nor the wisdom, nor the virtue to do so. Accepting our lack of freedom is a necessary step to counteract this undesirable condition. For so long as we remain in denial of the chains of servitude that are upon us, we will do nothing to cast them aside. But when we acknowledge our chains, we can begin to push back against them and, in the process, contribute to the creation of a better world, or as Camus noted, the task of men is not to desert historical struggles, nor to serve the cruel and inhuman elements in those struggles. It is rather to remain what they are, to help man against what is oppressing him, to favor freedom against the fatalities that close in upon it. Man's greatness lies in his decision to be greater than his condition. And if his condition is unjust, he has only one way of overcoming it, which is to be just himself. But widespread ignorance as to the lack of freedom is not the only reason why freedom is retreating from the world. Rather, there is also an idea that has infected many minds, and this idea, if not defeated, could prove to be the kiss of death for freedom in our generation. This idea is promoted by most politicians, indoctrinated into the youth at school and via popular culture, and championed by the vast majority of talking heads in the mainstream media. This idea is collectivism. To understand what collectivism is, we must consider the question, does the individual exist for the sake of society, or does society exist for the sake of individuals? Those who adhere to collectivism believe that the individual exists for the sake of society, and therefore that the individual has to subordinate himself to and conduct himself for the benefit of society, and to sacrifice his selfish private interests to the common good. This collectivist mindset is foundational to communism, fascism, and socialism. The common good before the individual good, proclaimed one of collectivism's most infamous adherents. The doctrine of collectivism has been put into practice by many dictators such as Hitler, Lenin, Stalin, Pol Pot, and Mao. Death, destruction, and suffering on a mass scale was the end result in each case. How does placing the good of society above the good of the individual tend towards such unfortunate outcomes? Is it not a display of compassion to sacrifice our personal interests for the greater good of our society? At first glance, collectivism may seem to be a virtuous position to take, but on closer investigation, a philosophical error called the fallacy of misplaced concreteness corrupts the practical application of this ideology. The fallacy of misplaced concreteness occurs when one treats what is merely an abstraction as an entity that exists in the real world. Collectivism, in claiming the individual must sacrifice his or her private interests for the sake of society, takes what is merely a concept, society, and treats such a concept as if it had a concrete existence. But as Carl Jung points out, society is nothing more than a term, a concept for the symbiosis of a group of human beings. A concept is not a carrier of life. In contrast to the individual that has a real existence in the world, society is an abstraction used to represent an ever-changing collection of individuals living and interacting in proximity. As far and as wide as one looks, one will never find a concrete entity called society that we can point to and identify in the manner analogous to how we can identify an individual. Society does not exist apart from the thoughts and actions of people. It does not have interests and does not aim at anything. The same is valid for all other collectives. Or as Carl Jung put it, the nation, like the state, is a personified concept. The nation has no life of its own apart from the individual and is therefore not an end in itself. All life is individual life, in which alone the ultimate meaning is to be found. As a society is a concept, it cannot think, act, speak, or choose, and therefore an individual or a group of individuals must be granted the ability to define the so-called societal greater good, and then granted the power to force individuals to act in service of this good. Since the dawn of civilization, it has been ruling classes who anoint themselves the arbiters of the greater good, and so not surprisingly the greater good, more often than not, merely amounts to the good of those in power. Or as the 20th century psychologist Nathaniel Brandon wrote, "With such collectivist systems, the individual has always been a victim, twisted against him or herself and commanded to be unselfish, in sacrificial service to some allegedly higher value, called God, or Pharaoh, or Emperor, or King, or society, or the state, or the race, or the proletariat, or the cosmos. It is a strange paradox of our history that this doctrine, which tells us that we are to regard ourselves, in effect, as sacrificial animals, has been generally accepted as a doctrine representing benevolence and love for humankind. From the first individual, who was sacrificed on an altar for the good of the tribe, to the heretics and dissenters burned at the stake for the good of the populace or the glory of God, to the millions exterminated in slave labor camps for the good of the race or of the proletariat. It is this collectivist morality that has served as justification for every dictatorship and every atrocity, past or present." The philosopher Georg Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel, a staunch collectivist who exerted a profound influence on the ideas of Karl Marx, promoted collectivism's negation of the individual with the following words. "A single person, I need hardly say, is something subordinate, and as such he must dedicate himself to the ethical whole. Hence, if the state claims life, the individual must surrender it. All the worth which the human being possesses, he possesses only through the state. Contrary to the philosophical trickery promoted by collectivism, neither the greater good of society, nor the state, nor any other concept used to describe a symbiosis of human beings is superior to flesh and blood individuals, whose spontaneous actions are the real creative and generative force in the world. As the 19th century British philosopher Oberon Herbert wrote, "The individual is king, and all other things exist for the service of the king," or as he further explained, "The individual is included in many wholes, his school, his college, his club, his profession, his town or county, his church, his political party, his nation. But he is always greater than them all. All these various wholes, without any exception, exist for the sake of the individual. They exist to do his service. They exist for his profit and use." The conviction that the individual is king informed the ideas of the Enlightenment thinkers of the 17th and 18th centuries, and led to a rapid awakening to the vital connection between freedom and the individual rights of life, liberty, and property. Generally speaking, individual rights specify that the only freedom which deserves the name is that of pursuing our own good in our own way, so long as we do not attempt to deprive others of theirs or impede their efforts to obtain it. Each is the proper guardian of his own health, whether bodily or mental or spiritual. Those who support individual rights are not motivated by an insensitivity to the plight and suffering of others, but rather by the recognition that in granting each of us the freedom to pursue our own good, social cooperation, the division of labor, and a prosperous society emerge in a bottom-up manner, and thus the ability to help others also improves. For without the wealth-generating mechanism of freedom, all the good intentions...
Okay, that's part of the talk. You can agree or disagree with any part of it. It's meant to create a stimulating dialogue. And I'd like to hear from you now at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I also want to provide you with a number that you can always download any of my programs from the archives. In fact, you could download up to 5 and listen to them. Please write down the new archive number, 631-359-9463. 631-359-9463. Also, you can listen live every day, even if we're syndicated everywhere. We're all over the world. But if for some reason you turn on your radio and I'm out there, you can always call this number and I'll be live on the air, 717-734-6955, 717-734-6955. Yesterday, Fauci made an interesting statement. I just read it before I went on the air today. He said that today we have two Americas, the vaccinated and unvaccinated. And of course, harping this was the media that somehow you are unworthy of the status of being, you know, a conscientious person if you choose not to be vaccinated. Now, the fact that the science does not support maximum vaccination of all citizens, for children in particular, 18 years and under, there is no science showing that being vaccinated protects you from the virus. To the contrary, most young people who contract the virus show little or no symptoms, and there's a 0.03% mortality rate, which means that more children will drown this year than die of COVID. And yet think of the side effects of the COVID vaccine, but they don't tell you about the side effects. You never hear them telling you about it, but we will. So let's just say you have an underlying medical condition. You have an autoimmune condition, and therefore you cannot have something that artificially stimulates the immune system, like a spike protein that can produce spike proteins indefinitely. They can overstimulate your immune system, in which case you can have severe adverse effects, including death. Or what about the people who've already been contacted by the virus and you're alive and well? Now you have natural immunity. So when you add all these people up, you're dealing with over two-thirds of the American population. So then what would be the evidence going against all the peer-reviewed, good-quality, independent science that shows these are the people who do not need to be vaccinated? And what about all the science showing that those countries, including India, which is now suing the woman who's the top person at the World Health Organization for downgrading and being derogatory against ivermectin when ivermectin is being used now at great success all around the world, and yet it is not supported by the World Health Organization, and it was denigrated by all the major media, including the New York Times, the Lancet, the British Medical Journal. They had to retract their attacks against it. They were wrong. Now there are hundreds and hundreds of studies. There are thousands and thousands of scientists who participated in these studies, and there are tens of thousands of patients who attest to its efficacy more than anything else the government has. All right? So you see, yeah, there are two Americans, one that's enlightened and one that's not. Now the irony of it is that those who've been vaccinated now are facing the reality that they may have been lied to. Why? Well, let's just take at the latest statistics I just received in the last 5 minutes. Now, these are actual statistics, all right? These are not in any way dealt with, and I'm going to share the ones from the European Union. As of an hour ago, this comes from the European Medicine Agency. 15,472 dead. I repeat, 15,472 dead and 1,509,266 injured. Wow. That's a lot. Now what is it in the United States? Well, in the United States, as of today, it's 6,113 people dead, and we do not know how many injured. That figure will come a little later in the day, but it's probably approaching a high number. We do know that we had injured 459,431, and mind you, this could be only one-tenth the actual number. You could actually be looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of over 5 million injured, and we're talking about 6,000 deaths. That could easily be 25 to 30,000 dead. But how about permanent disability? 5,172. How about emergency rooms? How about emergency room with doctors? 51,000. Hospitalizations, 21,000. So what about people that end up with some form of birth defect? 191. How about people who had life-threatening conditions after getting the vaccine, 6,435. So why don't you add those together? Well, now you're at 11,000 for the permanently disabled, and those with life-threatening conditions, 6,000. Those who've died, 6,000. Well, now you're at 19,000. So here's a question. Between the 19,000 in the United States and those also in Europe, you're dealing with 30,000 dead or permanently disabled, and millions injured. Since when does this not become a point of contention, and we're just seeing the beginning of a lot of persons' adverse effects, the shedding phenomena, the heart disease phenomena, the brain condition phenomena is just unfolding? Shouldn't there be the precautionary principle? I believe there should, but there isn't, and that's unfortunate. Let's see, we have Daryl. Daryl, your turn. You have something you'd like to share with us on the greater good.
Gary, Dr. Gary Nold, it's a pleasure speaking to you on the greater good. I'm very suspect of anyone who uses the phrase in the context that I've yet to see anyone using the phrase actually benefiting the greater good. So whenever in the examples that you gave earlier, for the most part, I failed to see how any of those things that the person who was using the phrase was talking about was actually benefiting the greater good. It was usually benefiting the person who was making the statement. So in the clip that you just played, I was somewhat lost in the point the person was making, in the context that if the individual is greater than the whole that the individual participates in, then perhaps, well.
Well, let me break it down for you from a different, okay, you don't get it. Let me try to share with you. First, I agree with you. Thank you, Daryl. That historically the greater good for the national security, we have to go into Vietnam or the domino effect. The greater good, we have to go into Korea, North Korea. The greater good, we have to destroy Libya or go into Syria, or we have to, you know, destabilize the socialist government of Venezuela because they represent a clear existential threat to. None of that was true. The greater good, we have to get the weapons of mass destruction, where the evidence actually showed just the opposite. So no, there was no greater good unless it was the military-industrial complex and all of its contractors and those who could profit from the carcass of a nation torn to pieces by our failed policy, yet those failed architects of that all remained in power, all got rich, not one was brought up and against the criminal court system, and we're not a member of the criminal court, universal criminal court system. So they benefited to the, so I agree with that. And now Fauci's saying, and Bill Gates is saying, for the greater good, we should all be vaccinated. But I'm just showing you that there's 30,000 dead or permanently injured people and at least 2 million injured, and we don't know what the outcome will be long term. So the greater good didn't help them. And now the science is showing that you do not get protected from the vaccine, and those were lies told and yet shared by the general media. So, again, look at who benefits when they tell you the greater good. Almost always those in power or special interest groups, not the person. The film was trying to make this point from my perspective, and that is that we should never dismiss the qualities of judgment and the acts of those individuals who, through the uniqueness of their being, provide us with insights that the group think has yet to embrace or even to understand. And when you look through history and you look at Galileo and you look at Newton and you look at Spinoza and you look at Eurydicles and Montaigne and so many wonderful thinkers, not one was accepted in their time. They were rejected. But that does not mean that their ideas should have been rejected. Their ideas have withstood. The people who were the group thinkers, we don't remember. So it is the idea that a village can raise a child better than a parent is also important. That was one of Hillary Clinton's big ideas that, you know, let's collectivize everything. And again, who benefits from this? Who benefits, for example, when you get rid of all small businesses, the major businesses, when all the major restaurants chain stay in business, but all small restaurants cannot afford to open back up again, then the business that was there for the small restaurants goes to the large businesses. And who represents the best ideas of dealing with global warming? The person is growing an organic garden, who tries to watch their carbon footprint. The person is conscious about planting trees and shrubs. The person who's conscious about not using plastic and not wasting, asking for paper, may seem insignificant, but when you have millions of people doing the same thing, it's not insignificant. That is not the greater good. The greater good is considered when big tech comes in and behind the harping of the global elite, including Klaus Schwab and the Great Reset, saying, let Silicon Valley solve our environmental problems. Let Silicon Valley solve our economic problems. Let them solve all problems. And now we end up with the collectivist mindset and holding the body politic captive. So individuals have no power, no say-so. In fact, they're marked, ridiculed, attacked, and silenced. That's what the film was trying to say. I appreciate your call, Daryl.
Hello.
Thank you very much. Daryl, we're out of time. I don't want to run in the next program's time. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.